Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we'll do a podcast tonight that we've kind of referenced throughout the course of the last 6 to 8 weeks or so since we started talking about this event. It is kind of the, not necessarily the final recruiting subject that we'll talk about, but it is the final main event, what a lot of these schools have kind of built towards throughout the summer, and it's the last real chance to get maybe make a real meaningful impression on a kid before you kind of roll into the season. So a lot of different situations to talk about tonight surrounding the July 28th Saturday Night Lights event, and just look forward to seeing where the conversation takes us. So as always, we want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce, three simple ingredients, one fantastic product for us, one superior sponsor, and somebody that we're very fortunate to be able to work with. And as always, just appreciate the general support that our audience has provided them over the years of our partnership.
No doubt, man. They've been a great partner with us. I'm actually looking forward to trying that new Louisiana Hot Sauce Sweet Honey Heat. So that could be pretty pretty nice here. Little summer grilling action, a little bit of that on some wings could really do the trick, man. But right now, we got to talk about this. Live from Tallahassee, it's Saturday night. Got the Saturday Night Live recruiting event going on in Tallahassee. This is something that that Willie and the crew have brought from Oregon. Like you said, the dead period ended on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, right? Well, I mean, full disclosure, recording this on Tuesday night, but Wednesday begins a 7-day quiet period. This is the basically the last chance to get kids on your campus in a camp-type setting, a big group-type setting, before most high schools have their fall practices kick off and have their own fall training camps. Now, Ingram, up your way in Georgia, I already saw some fans complain, or some high school coaches complaining about this because they're starting their stuff a little early. I didn't realize you guys in Georgia start quite so early, but apparently you do. Alabama's doing this. Florida State's doing this. Florida's doing theirs on Friday night, and I'll talk in a little bit about how that really helps FSU, by the way. Miami's doing this. Georgia is having their locker room reveal party on Saturday and a little camp thing on Friday. Michigan's having a barbecue. Penn State's having some kind of bash or something like that. A couple other schools are having it. So this is really, man, I got to tell you, we are going to learn a lot about where kids really want to go by where they show up, you know. And if certain kids don't show up this time, you can basically scratch them off your list. Or maybe other schools be scratching off kids off their list who show up to Florida State.
It's kind of a nice little moment that gives you an idea as to where you are, where you stand with these kids, and maybe it's a nice point of delineation as to how much time, effort, and resources you ultimately want to devote to a kid. So it's, you know, obviously you don't have an early signing period or anything like that, and I'm not trying to compare the two, but if you're looking to get an idea as to where you stand with maybe your prospect number one and whether or not you need to move down the board, it helps to give kind of one last chance before you move into a lot of these kids' senior year high school ball.
No doubt about it. Now, I was speaking with a source, FSU source, this week, and he said, hey, you know, Florida doing theirs on Friday night really helps us. And I said, why is that? And I thought I knew the answer. I wanted to kind of hear it from him. And he said, look, if you're a South Florida kid, Miami has their Paradise Camp on Saturday. Florida State's is also on Saturday. Florida's being on Friday, it's kind of a good way for you to get up in one weekend and see two schools, as opposed to before we might just be fighting against, you know, just Miami with some local South Florida kids. And that's like an 8-9 hour drive for some of those kids if you live in South Miami trying to get up to Doak. So if you can go to Gainesville on Friday night and go to Tallahassee on Saturday night, well, then that really helps us in terms of coaxing kids to go to both. And indeed, there are some kids who are definitely going to both. And I think if you're Florida State, you want to showcase your product in comparison to what Florida has. So being able to go second in that regard is pretty nice. And I don't think this is going to be a situation where UF is going to be able to keep kids, you know, longer than they should and have them not be able to go to the event. So
you just hope they don't get caught up in all the recent success and the momentum that surrounds UF recruiting efforts right now, and that maybe they just, you know, lose their head and exhibit a little bit of a pack mentality.
I got to tell you, man.
So they got that Pittman kid like they thought they would get, right?
No, that didn't actually. Uh-huh. No, he ended up going to Oregon. So I don't know how to say this, but man, I'll tell you what. if the recruiting gap between Clemson and Florida State is what it is right now between Georgia and Florida, I think doing this podcast would be pretty damn depressing. They are getting spanked again, dude. It's bad. It's Georgia just landed another five-star tonight. I think they have like 7 or 8 kids already in their class rated higher than a U.S. highest rated commit.
Have fun with that, Coach Mullen. Have fun.
Good luck. That's, man, you know, hey, it's all about development, man. Scheme and development is the key, right?
Yeah, definitely.
No doubt. Got to do some of that development. No, I'm sorry. They have 9 guys rated higher than U.S. highest rated.
Given too much credit, I see. Again. Well, so, yeah.
Yeah, Florida, but, I mean, I know this is not a Georgia podcast. Florida State has, Florida State has 3, but still 3 higher than, nope, that's 4. Sorry, Florida State has 4 rated higher than UF's highest rated. And if you were to combine the two classes, 9 of the top 10 players, if you were to combine the two classes, are from FSU's class.
Well.
Yeah. So, apparently FSU staff wants to get 10,000 people out to Doak to see this thing. It's going to be from 4 to 6 o'clock on Saturday. They're going to do some drills. They're going to do a little 7-on-7. They're going to do a lot of one-on-ones. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of, like, instructional stuff going on. It's going to be more just showing off how good you are and what your athleticism and whatnot is for the coaches. What kind of chances do you give that FSU gets 10,000 in the stands for this?
Well, unless they've done some, like, better outreach than I'm aware of, I would just have a hard time seeing this. This was kind of – it wasn't, like, announced late, but it wasn't given a whole lot of time to kind of breathe and gain steam. Hope I'm wrong, but I would be surprised if the number is above 6,500 or 6,000.
I think I would, too. Number one, this is just very hard to handicap. I don't know how to guess at something like this. Like, the spring game, at least we have other schools to reference, and we have past history of the event. With this, it's brand new. I have no idea how many fans are going to get out there. It's probably going to be really hot. It could rain. so those two things kind of going against you. It's also one of the last good weekends for families to take summer vacations before their kids are back in school. So there may be a decent number of folks who are not in town. And yet, you know, parents with young kids, they like events that are free, right? Because if the kid hates it, cool, we'll just leave. It's not like we waste any money to get in, go see it. So you may get a lot of people there just bringing their kids, bringing the family, come out for a little while. 4 to 6 is not ideal for the fans, but I do think there's a method to the madness. You know, they want to have some time with these kids after the event, maybe to do some dinner, maybe to do some hanging out, play some games or whatever, and yet still giving people enough time to drive home if they live in say, you know, like Central Florida or South Georgia, and get out of Tallahassee by, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night to where you're not getting back at 4 a.m. You're getting back more at like midnight if you choose not to stay over in a hotel. So I think that's just kind of stuff they're thinking about there. And I have no idea how many fans are going to show up, but I do think that, I know they got a lot of fans last year in Oregon for that thing, but I've been to Oregon in the dead of summer. I would go every single year for the opening, in fact. And, man, Oregon's hot in the middle of summer, but it's nowhere near Tallahassee hot. So I'm going to guess that, I'm going to guess they don't get 10,000, but I guess we'll see.
What exactly do you think is, I mean, we obviously talked about the fact that it's the last chance to get these kids on campus, and give you kind of a final opportunity to make like a real presentation as to what you're offering and kind of leave kids on a positive note before the season. But outside of that, what do you think Florida State's really trying to accomplish, or ultimately, what do you think would ultimately come out of the success that maybe on August 1st we're sitting here and judging this event? What would come out of the event that a couple days later we would sit here and judge it ultimately as a success?
Well, I think they do want to land a couple commitments out of the event if they can. You know, specifically maybe at the linebacker spot, maybe along the offensive line. We'll see on that. I think they need to make a positive impression on a couple other kids and make sure that they lock up return visits for them. Ingram, actually, on the notes page here, I scribbled down just a handful of kids who I thought were important kids that we could discuss. And number one, Kayvon Thibodeau. Pretty big name.
Heard of him.
Yeah. Number one player in the nation.
Big defensive end. Thousand Oaks, California. Guy that we've been talking about pretty consistently for 6 months now. And a guy that, it's a great sign. Great sign that Florida State is able to get him back on campus. And ideas that, you know, Florida State and Alabama are the two main players, at least on this side of the country. And then ultimately it'll be a little bit of a decision maybe as to how much USC gets involved as to whether or not a third school really presents itself. You are infinitely more familiar on the you know, detailed levels and day-to-day changes on things like that, but that at least seems to be my perspective from what I've seen from Thibodeau's recruitment so far.
So he's also visiting UF this weekend. I guess it's a little bit cheaper to fly over there. I got a big kick out of one of the UF site moderators saying that was the reason why he was visiting Florida. The day before, it was cheaper to fly in to wherever he was flying into over there. You know, disappointing, I think, that he's not going to come out on a multi-day visit, but still, I don't think that was really ever the plan for him to visit earlier. He also had tweeted that on Sunday he's going to visit FAMU, so that you know, that would be pretty cool. I know Kayvon is really active in social causes, and you know, I don't know how serious he is about looking at an HBCU, but for Florida State purposes, if he's going to be high on an HBCU, I think the one they would want him to be really high on would be FAMU, because that would mean he's in Tallahassee a lot more often. So they just want to make a good impression on him, make a further connection with him and his family between he and the coaching staff, and further establish Tallahassee as a real legitimate contender for his signature. I do think it's mostly Florida State and Alabama. And, you know, as it's been described to me, hey, if he wants more of a business-like approach, it'll probably be Alabama. If he decides he wants more of a family, you know, personalized approach, then it'll probably be Tallahassee. So we'll just have to see which one of those he likes. I do think FSU's pitch on him makes a lot of sense, right? You're probably not going to out, like, you know, out NFL factory Alabama, right? You know, if you're both trying to sing the exact same tune, that's probably not real smart. So figuring out what your pitch is and how to differentiate your product is going to be really key here. It's also going to be key with a couple of these Mississippi kids are coming in, man. The next three kids on our list, Charles Cross, Kobe Dean, and Derek Hall. I guess we'll start with Charles Cross.
Yeah, so Cross is another kid that we've talked a lot about, Mississippi product. One of the higher rated tackle prospects on the board, a guy that Florida State seems to be in a good position. Maybe some more schools from the SEC West that may get involved as his recruitment progresses, but appears to, all things considered, Florida State has to be pretty happy with where they stand here at the end of July for Mr. Cross.
Yeah, I know he had talked about maybe deciding before his season. I don't know if he's necessarily someone who I would expect to pop for FSU on his visit. I know he likes Auburn a lot, and the Mississippi schools are also involved. But look, you get him down, you get him working with Greg Fry more, you get him going against some of the better competition in the Southeast. I mean, him going against Thibodeau, I would expect Thibodeau to really dominate him, to be honest. I think Cross is a guy who's not a super early playing time type kid, but has good upside. And I believe he possesses what they're looking for in a tackle prospect, and also getting to see him go against some kids we'll mention a little bit later. But you want to further that relationship with him and get yourself in position to where you can get a commitment. And obviously Charles was down, like you said, in over the summer. So this is not like it's his first time on campus. But N'Kobe Dean, this is his first visit, and I got to tell you, there was a lot of consternation there. I think about all the visits that had been planned and then canceled and planned and canceled, and I think there's some people who are just ready to kind of just wash their hands of this recruitment. But it looks like he's now going to come. I believe it'll be a multi-day visit, by the way. N'Kobe Dean, and I'm going to write an article about this, is one of three kids who FSU's recruiting who I really think would be a day one starter for Florida State. Those kids are N'Kobe Dean, Evan Neal, and probably Trezvan Marshall as well. I think that Dean could walk in that door tomorrow and start at linebacker next to Dontavius Jackson. I'm not talking about like in 2019. I'm talking about like if he were to skip his senior year of high school and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to roll in today, he's a starter. Or at least he's going to play a lot of minutes. Maybe I shouldn't say starter, but immediate contributor. Getting him is going to be a big-time battle. A lot of people think Alabama there. I know some people think Georgia. Look, you're fighting the two best recruiting schools in the country, two schools that I don't really think you're going to win a whole lot of battles against, and nobody will, I don't believe. Ohio State's not involved, so I guess that would be the third one. But you got to find some way to get in and pitch something that those two schools are not, and I think that could be playing time.
Well, we know that this staff has no problem with being rather aggressive with how they present a particular situation and opportunity that may exist for linebacker recruits. So I think that's something that you could make kind of an educated guess that could happen and perhaps even have an expectation that it will.
I think that's exactly right, man. Like you gotta make the connection with him. You got to make the connection with his family. And look, that the kid is actually coming down, helps to reinforce that he actually did have some interest. Now, he's made multiple visits to other places, so that is discouraging. But he's a kid you can't take off your board since he said he's going to come down and he actually went through and made the plans, unlike Christian Harris, who, repeatedly said he was going to come take a visit and never did. So that other kid's off the board now. Another guy they're looking at the linebacker position, Derek Hall from Gulfport, Mississippi. His defensive line coach there actually played for Florida State. So there's a connection there that I think Florida State will look to use to its advantage. I think Derek's another guy who could get early playing time for FSU. He's not necessarily in that N'Kobe Dean mold.
So really different type of, if you have a knock on Dean, it's that he's maybe a little undersized, although particular linebackers can get away with that. Hall's the exact opposite. I mean, he's 6'4", 220 or so. A lot of his highlight tape is actually him playing wide receiver too. I mean, he's pretty remarkable athlete and is somebody that would be a real good complement to another Mississippi linebacker in the class.
So with him, it looks like Auburn has already secured an official visit on September 14th. If you're FSU, I think the goal with Hall is going to be, hey, let's get an early official visit with you as well, right? Or at least one that's going to allow you to make a decision. Without having taken that Auburn one and going too long on it. I know Mississippi State's also recruiting him. They're doing a very solid job recruiting that state this year. And Mississippi this year is absolutely loaded. So getting those three kids down will be big. And another linebacker, man, Kalen DeLoach from Savannah. Guy that's already visited campus once or twice. Has a good relationship with the staff. He is a guy who I would definitely have on I'm going to call it pop watch or commit watch or whatever you want to call it. He's a guy that wouldn't shock me if he went ahead and pulled the trigger at this event.
So interesting. That seems to be one of the potential names that's floating around there. But whenever I see a picture of DeLoach, he's listed at 6'1", 205, which isn't exactly like a giant of a linebacker, but for a high school kid, that's not too much cause for concern. But is that... In your opinion, you think that's a accurate representation? I've just seen some odd angled photos of him or anything else. Just some things that maybe would have me concerned with him being slightly undersized.
Yeah, he's not real thick. There's no doubt about it. He's a guy they want to get and have him operate in space and have him put weight on, But he's a guy I know for a fact they like a lot. Smart kid, smart player, comes from a good family. They need more kids like that in the program, right? To have more good locker room kids. Although, after our discussion last week, maybe not quite as many as they initially thought they would need to bring in. And if you don't think that's a consideration out there as a recruiting staff on any school, you're fooling yourself. They do care about balancing that locker room culture. You can't have too many knuckleheads. You can't have too many guys who are troublemakers or just overly immature, because then it gets infectious.
How many Malik Henrys a class can you sign?
Hey, you heard us on Last Chance U, apparently. I've never actually watched the show, but I'm going to watch it now. My wife has a Netflix account. If I know how to, I actually don't know how to operate that thing. That's kind of embarrassing.
I think you'd figure it out pretty quickly. It's user-friendly. But yeah, Netflix was kind enough to use a little bit of our audio, and never a bad thing to kind of unexpectedly have some piece of work that you've done featured in something like that. So
did they were they kind enough to credit us?
No credit. We're still working on that.
I've been working on that for decades now with some of these other websites out there. They take our stuff and just it seems to end up everywhere, man.
What the humorous thing was the titles or the sub caption, well, not closed caption, rather, excuse me, identified you as FSU reporter and me as FSU coach. So we've really woven our way into the program, bud.
How much do you think they paid the production assistant to cut that clip and put the subtitles on there?
That's a great question. I would wonder how seriously they took their work that day.
Yeah, that's probably like an $8 an hour job. I'm guessing.
If it's even an unpaid internship, but good. That was fun. And Malik Henry, I wish what I said wasn't accurate about the young man. But damn, if the next eight episodes of the show didn't kind of make you wonder as to whether or not he would ever have any kind of meaningful future in football. So interesting to see where he lands.
We also got a bunch of questions about that. Before we finish the rest of this list, I do want to note, everybody's like, how could they have taken this kid and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. We had a really good synopsis of this, actually, on a show. And I don't remember which episode it was, but it was like probably 2 years ago, right? And the one-minute version of this is that they did not know about all of his issues at the time that they started to recruit him and took his commitment. The issues, I think, started to show themselves more and more, like as the recruiting process drew on. But at that point, you were already having that kid be the quote-unquote leader of your class, forming relationships for you. And because quarterback recruiting happens so quickly, right, all these kids commit so fast. You look around, there's not really like a bunch of other good guys you could go get. You'd have to work on flipping somebody, and quarterbacks very rarely flip from one elite school to another. So they were kind of really stuck, and I actually don't disagree with the course of action they took, hoping that they could get him into the program and get him get him straight. Right? The people who are like, what a huge massive screw up by them for not seeing this kind of stuff, blah blah blah. I think that is honestly a good bit of revisionist history. And I know the trendy thing is just to bash Jimbo for every single thing he did. But I think if you look at the timeline of sort of when we knew certain stuff, right, and when you would hear stuff from the previous schools he was at, it really escalated more after he had committed and after he had already been committed for a while. So that they didn't really have a great course of action they could have undertaken. And then obviously, when the issues continued in Tallahassee, he was quickly dismissed.
It's a good 1 minute synopsis. And yeah, I don't necessarily, it would have been hard to change gears in the 2016 class. And you're right. A lot of these, particularly for the real elite kids, like the kids in that year were Eason and Henry and a couple other quarterbacks that slipped my mind. But a lot of those kids are, when it's that obvious of a prospect, a lot of times, when they're 15, 16 years old and they start camping, and as soon as you kind of make somebody a focus, it's everybody else kind of shifts gears accordingly, and it's hard to get back in with a really elite quarterback recruit. I would say that with the knowledge that you signed Malik Henry and what you knew about him, if you want to be skeptical about that, I think it's a better idea to be skeptical with what you did in the 2017 class coming off it. I don't know that you can sign Bailey Hawkman and James Blackman in the recruiting class immediately following. Obviously, you'd want to always sign as good of a prospect as you can, but I would think that maybe you could have done a better job there, or made that a little bit higher, more of a priority. We've done a lot of Mississippi talking, bud. Why don't we do a little Louisiana talking? Mr. Cardell Thomas out of Baton Rouge is an offensive line prospect that's making his way to Tallahassee.
Now he is committed to LSU. They call this guy Pancake. He just pancakes everybody in a lot of these competitions. I like him. I think his rating is maybe a little bit inflated now after some of those highlights, but he's an excellent prospect. Now, I don't really know what kind of chance I give Florida State in flipping him from LSU. I think it would have to involve some combination of LSU really faltering this year, which is possible. They do have a difficult schedule like Florida State does and may not have an answer quarterback, although we'll see. It's good they're getting him in on a visit. You're going to get to see him compare to another couple of elite kids you have. I know as of yesterday, Dante Lucas is still planning on coming up, and so is Charles Turner. Both kids from IMG, one actually is committed to FSU, one's committed to LSU. But getting Cardell on campus, look, it's never a bad thing to have five stars on your campus. We say this all the time. The worst that can happen is that they can go back and tell their friends how cool Florida State was. And if those friends happen to be 2020 or 2021 kids, then they can become Louisiana kids who FSU will make overtures to and ultimately not sign, because that seems like what always happens with Louisiana kids. Excuse my skepticism there. But it's good to get those offensive linemen on campus. There's a couple more. I have a big list on TomahawkNation.com. I think I have over 50 kids listed. I have either confirmed them specifically with the kid, the high school coach, or with a Florida State source. I'm not wish casting on that list, and my goal is to not have to pull kids off, I expect this kid to come, but then all of a sudden he doesn't come, when in reality the kid never said anything about it. These are like kids that I've actually taken the effort to verify. So check that whole list out on Tomahawk Nation. I'll have it on the front page through Saturday. But I'm interested in Charles Turner too, man, the IMG kid. I know he's committed to LSU, but as far as I know, he doesn't have any actual LSU ties. He's from Ohio. He showed me something down there at the Miami Nike camp. And what he showed me was he really had some real FU in him. I know it's a family-friendly show, so I hope that's cool. But these Miami kids, they act a certain way, right? And Turner just moved down from Ohio. And he didn't take any of that BS that they wanted to talk to him. And I'm not talking about just like University of Miami kids, just kids from down there, They'll test you to see if you're tough or not, to see if you're gonna kind of tuck your tail and cower. And he did not, man. He got right back up in their face. I like that nastiness, that competitive fire for him. So that was pretty cool. And he also showed some really nice bend. And maybe he can play some center. Maybe he can play some tackle. I think Florida State wants to see him and work him out a little bit.
But one kid that Turner might be matched up in positional drill is a defensive end, real kind of long, lanky prospect, although has some fairly impressive film, but Lloyd Summerall, kid out of Lakeland, Florida.
Yeah, man. I'm expecting Lloyd to come up and to compete. He's been there at FSU a couple times. Now, they have a lot of defensive ends in their class. I know a Michigan site reported that Michael Morris, a current FSU quote-unquote defensive end commitment, who I don't believe has the ability to play defensive end at Florida State based on what he has shown so far, is going to be in the Michigan barbecue event, not the FSU one. So read some tea leaves there, man, if you would like to. But Summerall is a top defensive end target out of the Auburndale area, high on Florida, high on Florida State, high on Miami, also likes Georgia. So we'll have to see what kind of impression Florida State can make on him and his dad. I know they really enjoyed it the last time they came up. One key element in this recruitment that I've identified is how they're going to pitch the defense to him. Because I know that Florida's telling him he's going to be a stand-up outside linebacker, right, in their 3-4 defense, which I'm sure in that defense he would be. Florida State is not running a 3-4. They're running a 4-down defense. So he'd be more of a true defensive end in FSU's scheme. And, at some of these camps, Summerall has not been super impressive. And I think one of the issues here is that he has not had the best coaching to date, right? I don't know who he has working with him. He's very much an upside guy to me, and they're going to have to keep working with him. But he does have extremely high upside, so I'm definitely high on him.
He's real raw. I mean, his there was a defensive end, third guy in the rotation of Boulware and Wilson, Greg Spire, that's the name that I was looking for. But Spire used to talk about this one move that he had that was not particularly authentic, but looked more like something out of a basketball game. And that's a lot of what Summerall does. I mean, he just stands up and he tries to shake an offensive tackle with his all raw athleticism. And you're right, a little bit of coaching wouldn't hurt, but the raw product certainly appears to be there, and he's a pretty intriguing prospect.
You know, he actually ended up going in the third round because he had a cracked fibula entering the end of his junior year.
Spire did? I didn't realize he went in the third round.
He went to Mariner High School, which is down by me here in Fort Myers. It's actually over in the Cape, but it's very close. Pretty good player for the Bucks too for a while.
That 97 defense that he started on, that's probably isn't that the defense that knocked out every opponent until the Florida game, every quarterback until the Florida game that year. Nobody finished a game. That was of all the dominant defenses, that was probably the meanest, most aggressive one. And so yeah, fond memories when you think back of Greg Spires.
That team had Sam Coward on it too. 97. Angry Sam Coward.
A rehabbed, trying to make his money Sam Coward. Absolutely. Angry Sam Coward. It had position change. Andre Wadsworth, if I remember correctly, also trying to make his money. Pretty wild to think that was a walk-on who ended up starting for you at nose tackle and then kind of worked his way out to end where he was maybe the best defense player of the year. So somehow we just walked down late 90s Florida State football, and that was enjoyable. But Bud, we'll get back to two more kids that we're fairly confident are coming this weekend before we maybe touch on three or four that are more up in the air. But product from the state of Florida, another linebacker here, Jordan Rico.
Yeah, so we have Jordan Rico at Yulee, Florida. I know the staff likes. And also Lee Pogba, who is a West Virginia commit from North Carolina. It's no secret FSU needs linebackers this year. They would like to take four linebackers. They have one right now. Ingram, my math says they need three more. So I think that they are going to use this opportunity to work out Jordan and work out Lee and see who they like better. And to be honest, it would not surprise me if they walk away taking a commitment from one of these two guys. Pogba and Rico are a little bit different players. Pogba is more kind of lankier. I think Jordan is a little better maybe against the run. But they're different types of players, but they could be competing for that same spot in this FSU defense. And it's very good that FSU is getting numbers on the offensive line and linebacker. Oh, one kid I didn't put on the list. Watch out for Howard Allen. Howard Allen is I got to tell you, man, if he is able to get his academics into a spot to where, you know, he's able to like seriously threaten to qualify, oh, man, Howard Allen, if people even get a hint that he's going to be a qualifying type, I bet you his ranking shoots up several hundred spots. Big time athleticism, 6'5", 275, offensive tackle, with the frame to be 300 plus. They're getting him in. That's a guy I think if you're Florida State, you take a flyer on.
So this is a offensive tackle out of Jacksonville, Florida, not somebody we necessarily talked about, but
he's a guy I've known about for a while. It's just when I was at, you know, when people said, man, if that kid could get his academics to where he could qualify, you know, then look out. If you watch his film, dude, he engulfed people. I mean, you just watch the first couple of plays, right? He's quick out of his stance, and all of a sudden he's roaching the guy onto the ground as well. It's pretty nice. Got some nastiness to him. I'm a fan, so get to see him. And then there's a couple guys up in the air I wanted to mention real quickly before we tell you about this awesome Madison Social bar crawl that we're going to be participating in. I know that FSU was hoping to get some of these kids in. Jaden Hazelwood, John Dunmore, Tyreek Stevenson, and Kavaris Crouch. Now, I know FSU thinks that Hazelwood and Dunmore are like maybe more likely than the public thinks to visit. We'll see if that actually happens. Stevenson is supposed to be at Florida State and supposed to be at Georgia, so I guess we'll see what happens there. And then Crouch might be riding down with quarterback Sam Howell. So that would be a that would be good if he actually goes and does that, because he's an elite linebacker kid who they would like to get down. And I think if you're Florida State, you got to find a way to make that happen. So,
Bud, why don't we pause here real briefly to thank our friends Madison Social, or For the Table Restaurant Group, for what they've been able to do with us historically, and also take this time to remind people again of the event that we are doing with them from 2 to 4 on the Sunday prior to the Labor Day kick of the Virginia Tech game.
That's right, man. It's going to be a blast. We know we had a couple hundred folks out at the last one. This one is the Game Day Bar Crawl, 2 to 4 on Sunday, the day before FSU kicks off the season. Lethal Simplicity meets the Nolcast. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the weekend bar crawl. It's us. It's Madison Social. It's Township. It's Central. It's For the Table Restaurant Group. It's Proof Brewing Company. It's awesome. By the way, here's what you're going to get. You're going to pre-order your tickets on madisonsocial.com/gameday-bar-crawl. That's madisonsocial.com/gameday-bar-crawl. I'll also put a link to that in our Twitter page, because that's a lot to type in. So look at the Twitter page and we'll be able to hook you up with that. Bar crawl will include a Proof Madison Social. That's kind of, I like the wording on that, at Madison Social. A Proof Mango Wit at Central, and a Proof Warpath IPA with a special Nolcast treatment at Township. And we'll have more details on that soon, as well as a Nolcast Punting is Bunting koozie that will be perfect for game day the next day. That is awesome. Your friends will be very jealous if you get that very cool Punting is Bunting koozie. I don't believe we have any new shirts coming from that. We may have a different shirt to sell later on. So come out 2 to 4, hang out with Ingram and I, hang out with all the Noles, and then you know what is later that night? You get a chance to watch Miami lose to LSU. That's a Sunday night game. I didn't even realize that. That'd be pretty fun as well. So anyway, get those tickets. Get them early. They will sell out, so we definitely want to make sure everybody gets in. We want to have an accurate head count so we know how many koozies we need to have on hand, and we'll see you all there.
All right, Bud. Certainly look forward to a chance to catch up with everybody at the Madison Social event. And that will lead us directly into our very popular buy or sell segment. So first, want to thank the listeners. Last couple rounds of questions, we have really been fortunate and have added some nice value to the show. So thank you to those of you who have taken the time to submit various questions that you have. For this particular batch, we'll get into them now, Bud. Buy or sell, the FBS splitting into another division in the next decade due to paying players, stipends, profiting off likeness, etc. Pretty interesting idea. What's your original take?
I would say in the next decade, no. In my lifetime, so I'm going to sell, because we need to stop changing around the questions to fit our own needs. But I'm going to sell because it says in the next decade. If it said, you know, maybe the next quarter century, then I would absolutely buy it.
I want to sell this, but I think I will just take a flyer and buy that something happens here. I don't, and I said this recently to a gentleman that I was having coffee with, I just don't think that we're on a sustainable track right now with the money that's being poured into college football programs, both, you know, both kind of above board and below. I just don't think that we're in a situation where not necessarily even all that many schools, but the number's very small. And I wonder where we go with that and what that ultimately looks like as kind of the even just the laughable notion that this is amateur athletics becomes even more of a charade. So the next 10 years is a little bit of a tight window to see that much of a transformational thing happening, but I'll buy it as I, at this point in time, I don't think that we're on a very sustainable track with where this sport's headed.
So I completely agree with you as far as it's not sustainable. Did you happen to catch what Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney referred to the Power Five as, by the way? He called them the Autonomous Five. And I know we were kicking around in one of our group chats that maybe he was starting to use the term Autonomous Five, which is kind of annoying to say.
But maybe he was doing that to emphasize the fact that the Power Five conferences do have the autonomy to break off if they want to, or to make some decisions that affect just them as opposed to maybe football as a whole. By the way, this segment is not currently sponsored. So if you would like to sponsor the buy or sell segment, please do hit us up. That's the Nolcast at gmail.com. Obviously, you know, it gets a lot of exposure, and we look forward to working with you if that suits your needs. We have all the kind of stats you might need. And so hit us up if you have serious advertising needs. Ingram, with the exception of Georgia Tech, FSU will have the most rushing attempts in the ACC next season. This is a good one. Nice. Yeah, I like this.
I'll buy this. I will. And maybe I'm being optimistic in my head as to kind of the scenario that I would see where this would play out. But I will buy that and follow this one particularly close, as I think it's a great question. And I'll be real interested to see where this, how this ultimately projects.
So let me ask you this. Did you read this as in conference games, or did you read it like total, like just for all the teams in the ACC, you know, Florida State will have the second most?
I at least mentally read this as a ACC exclusive, as far as how the numbers are judged.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. In that case, I'm also going to buy. The reason why I think that's important is because Florida State has the number one or number two schedule in the nation per a lot of metrics out there. And I think even if you think those are bunk, everybody can pretty much agree, I would think, that it's like at least a top five, top eight type schedule. In 2015, Willie Taggart's Gulf Coast offense in conference play had the second most rushing yards to a triple option team named Navy's. They had 46 game, Navy had 61. So that was indeed second in the league. And then in 2016, they were fifth in rushing attempts per game. Now, the teams ahead of them that year, Navy, who obviously still ran the triple option, Tulsa, who was running a version of the spread option, Tulane, which was installing their new option, their new triple option offense, and then Temple, Temple was not an option team. So one option team, one non-option team was ahead of them that year, but they were very close, 46 to 44 in terms of attempts per game in conference. And then we can look at the Pac-12 last year in conference games. Click on the right link, Mr. Elliott. And Oregon was number one in attempts per game in the Pac-12 last year with 49 rushing attempts per game. That's 49. So that is that's an awful lot. I'm absolutely buying this all day.
FSU is one win or more better with Francois quarterback over Blackman, speculating no injuries to either throughout the rest of the season.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say sell. I really don't think that, like, I would change my win projections by a full win with either guy. And it's just too early to say, even if you have a hunch, in my opinion, because we don't know what Francois is going to look like. We don't know if he's going to be the same type of runner he was pre-injury, or at least ability. Obviously, the frequency of running was not always there. We don't know how much rust he's going to have. We don't know how he's going to play in this new offense. That's what training camp's for. So right now, I'm absolutely going to sell this. What about you?
Yeah, for brevity's sake, I will sell and just say that I agree with what you say. There's too much certainty to start slapping a plus one win on a quarterback that we don't really know what the wants will be of the offense. Bud, the second to last question is, FSU ends the year with eight or more players on all ACC team. Our questionnaire notes that this can encompass the first, second, and third team of the conference.
Well, that's good because they only had two guys on the preseason first team, which came out on Tuesday. And that was Cam Akers and Ricky Aguayo. The only real guy who I thought got snubbed off the first team was probably Levante Taylor, who I think is a good player, I don't know if he's quite as good as some of our fans think he is, but maybe he is. I'm always a little bit hesitant to kind of overcredit guys who play the field corner spot in college ball because of where the hash marks are. A lot of those quarterbacks you face just can't attack. They really can't attack the field side like they can the boundary side through the air. So eight. All right. Akers, do you think FSU will have a quarterback in the top three? Let's assume Finley and Dungy take the top two. Will they get a receiver? And there's, what, nine receiver spots? I think they'll get a receiver. So to me, that would be Akers and a receiver. I think they'll get an offensive lineman or two. So that would be four on offense. I'll give him Aguayo. That's five. It's a bye. Yeah. Yeah, I think among the first three teams, this is going to be a bye, and I think it's a fairly easy bye. By the way, Ingram, before we get to the last buy or sell and our last topic tonight, I do have something to tell you about. Buy or sell, coming to see me talk at the Atlanta Seminole Club Spirit Fest on Saturday, August 4th, brought to you by the Atlanta Seminole Club. So here's a little pitch that I wrote up from the notes from the call I had with the fine folks at the ATL Seminole Club. I do a lot of these booster club speaking tours, by the way. So if you'd like to have me come speak at your booster club or quarterback club, just let me know and maybe I'll show up. I'll be speaking for about an hour. A little team preview, a little Q&A, a little recruiting chat, or whatever you all want to chat about. We're good for it. Where? It'll be at the Buckhead Strip from 5 to 8 p.m. with a pub crawl to follow. That's the Buckhead Strip, 5 to 8 p.m., pub crawl to follow. Parking, plenty of it behind and around the Buckhead Strip, so don't have to worry about that. Tickets, $15, pre-sale, $20 at the door. Children 10 and under are free. Door prizes, silent auction, former players, FSU cheerleaders, a game truck for kids, food and drink. Also, if you want to sponsor them, they still have sponsorships available starting online for as low as $100. Pretty cool. Where do you go? AtlantaSeminoles.com, or you can hit them up on Twitter at ATL Seminole Club. So AtlantaSeminoles.com if you want even more me talking about Florida State and hanging out with other FSU fans and in the pub crawl to follow, which I'm sure everybody will be appropriately served and not passing out due to all the heat and stuff. No, it's gonna be a blast. It should be a really good time. I'm happy to work with those guys and looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Good to have you up here in Atlanta. Bud, Florida State has a freshman on the freshman All-American team at the end of the year.
Oh, bye. Jaden Woodby. Easy bye for me. I think he's going to start day one.
Woodby is the first name that pops in my mind. If there's a second option, who would that be?
Well, if Peters qualifies, maybe? Yeah, just from a pass rushing standpoint? I don't know. I really wasn't thinking about a second option because he was so far out in front.
These freshman All-American, I will just say you can have some concentrated stat performances and make your way onto that team. Sometimes you can see some crazy things. So I'll just take a flyer. I think your Peters qualifying is a great one. Maybe if Treshawn Harrison is involved in a couple big plays, you could see him make something like that. But yeah, it certainly it's Woodby, and then working real hard to try to find who the next option might be.
No doubt. Let's close tonight with this. I do this every year on SB Nation, and I wanted to share it on the podcast. Who is ready? Are you ready to feel old? Like real old?
It happens more frequently than I would like for it, seemingly with each day that I exist on this earth. But yeah, please, hit me with it.
All right, Ingram, I'm going to hit you with a trivia question here. Class of 2019 recruits, which of these teams were they born to see a national title from? Miami, Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Nebraska, Penn State, or Notre Dame?
You gave me almost too many to keep track of. Georgia is hilarious, as I've barely seen that. And when I say I've seen it, no, actually, no, that's about 100 days before I made my way to this planet. So no on Georgia, No on Tennessee, as that was 98. Notre Dame, no. Hit me with some of those other ones.
Michigan, Nebraska, Miami, Penn State, and Oklahoma.
No, 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 no.
Damn, you're good. Yeah, it was a trick question. In fact, these guys were not born for any of these. Here are the teams that have won national championships since these kids entered kindergarten. You ready? You're going to feel really old here. Florida, LSU, Florida, Bama, Auburn, Bama, Bama, Florida State, Ohio State, Bama, Clemson, Bama.
You know, sometimes I wonder why Alabama does as well as they do on the recruiting trail. It's a mystery. When kids look at the last 9 years of college football, and basically it's a coin flip as to whether or not they're going to win the national championship that year.
It is strange. Yeah, very, very, very odd. I got the idea for this post for a couple things. Number one, this last year, this was, remember Jamar Chase, a pretty good receiver. He had never heard of Peter Warwick. And so his 7-on-7 coach was like, Peter Warwick was a monster. Like, here's the highlight tape. And Jamar said, had to be before my time. But Jamar was right. He was not born for Peter Warwick. Also, I got a big kick out of all these Tennessee fans tweeting, feels like 98 to these kids. These kids were -3 years old. When Tennessee won a national title, they never saw Ricky Williams or Ron Dayne or Chris Winkie or Eric Crouch or Carson Palmer or Jason White or Matt Leinart or Reggie Bush play in college. I mean, I guess they were technically born when Reggie Bush was playing, but they were like 3 and 4 years old and he was actually playing. So, you know, probably don't have great memories of that. Like the guys that are relevant to them, Heisman winners, Baker, Lamar, Derrick Henry, Mariota, Winston, Manziel, you know, RG3, Cam Newton, you know, Mark Ingram, probably Tebow, you know, if they live in Florida. You know, Tebow was when they were 6. Like I remember Charlie Ward for sure, and I was 8. So this is the reality if you're a college football recruit. Like, this is what you have grown up with. Ken Dorsey and John Vilma, they don't know who the hell those guys are. They don't remember Sean Cody at USC or heck, they probably don't really remember Vince Young. That's the one that kind of you know hit it home for me because I was a junior in college.
Well, and it's what a lot of people our age consider the best college football game that they've ever seen.
Right. So it is worth it, I think, to teach the kids about like what happened in the past and teach them about tradition. But it's not real smart to be like, I can't believe you never heard of this guy. Because if they didn't grow up in a college ball family, who's telling them about it? Nobody. And it's not like they were alive to see it. So I would just say, if you're one of these Twitter folks out there who likes to tweet at recruits, maybe don't be surprised when you're like, well, I've never heard of, I don't know, who's somebody. I guarantee you, if you asked all the kids committed to Florida State right now, I bet you less than 10% have ever heard of Chris Winkie.
I think that's probably accurate. What do you think P-Dub's Q rating is? 35%? 45%? Well, maybe a little bit differently because he's been around the program so much, but
I would say probably 1 in 3 simply because I know that Florida State has made more of an effort to show his highlights off, you know? So probably 1 in 3, I would guess. But the Q rating of the guys like Jalen Ramsey and Xavier Rhodes and Telvin Smith and LaMarcus Joyner, that's through the roof because these guys have all seen those dudes play in person or on TV live. Those are kind of the memories. You know, here's the other crazy thing. You know that the last time a team west of the Mississippi won a title, recruits were only 4 years old?
Happened to be a consumer of a lot of the stuff that you wrote and saw that. And that's, I mean, it's obviously indicative of the list of schools that we just labeled off and how many of those happen to be located in the deep South, but that's pretty wild. I mean, there's only so many out there, and that's why when USC gets it really cooking, they have such a massive advantage that they do, because I don't know that they even recruit against anybody west of the Rockies really for the most elite of the elite talent, but That is still a pretty startling statistic to look at.
I mean, it's kind of becoming a very regional game in some ways.
Well, it's becoming a regional game as to the part of the country or part of the region of the country that's willing to, you know, just spend super dumb money on it and do everything that they can to win. It is.
That's very fair. That's really fair. 5 stars on iTunes for us. We like 5-star reviews. If we're your favorite Florida State podcast, you know, give us a written review that you love us and share us on Facebook and let people know. Numbers have been great. We just want to keep everything going. We love talking with y'all.
Even if we're your second favorite, we'll take that 5-star review as well.
Yeah, that could be all right. I mean, you know.
Appreciate the feedback that we do receive from people. Bud, look forward to this event. Be a pretty interesting moment in time as Taggart kind of looks to build his first real recruiting class and have an opportunity to go through the summer and put himself in as good a position to have that Tribe 19 class be everything that he wants. So we'll be excited to see how this plays out over the weekend. Excited to see what the whole cast of kids that makes their way to Tallahassee, and even more excited to speak with you after it at some point in time and try to give people a breakdown as to where Florida State stands with these kids moving into the season.
Looking forward to it, man. We'll chat soon.